It's time now for our ongoing series discussing substance use disorder as a treatable disease, brought to you by the Grays Harbor Consortium. This time we're talking about enabling versus support. And who's with us this morning?
Cash McCollum.
First off, enabling, support. What's the difference between enabling and support? Because it's a fine line, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a pretty fine line. I mean, and the differences are mostly subtle. I guess when I think of it, I think about like you support a child that's learning to walk by letting them walk a little bit and kind of helping them along and giving them kind of goals to achieve for their next steps. Where if you're kind of enabling the child, you're doing all the walking for them. You're never giving them a chance to take their next steps. You're catching them every time they start to fall, and you're stopping them when they start to walk on their own, and you pick them up and carry them around and do all the work for them. And that's kind of how I look at the difference between the two.
The difference between the two. Enabling. I've known several parents throughout the years who have had, unfortunately, problems with children who have started to abuse substances. The child comes to them and says, I need some money. I don't have any money. I need some money. And the parents shell out the money. That's enabling, isn't it? Or is it supporting? Once again, the fine line, huh?
It's kind of, it depends on the scenario, right? I mean, for myself in my addiction and for myself in my recovery, if you hand me a handful of money, I'm probably not going to buy food with it in my active addiction, right? Probably going to go right down the street and
buy your drugs,
pick up some heroin, and then yep. I'm sicker for another day. I mean, the same thing, like, and there's all kinds of things. Like, that parent might also think, all right, if I don't give this kid any money and I just buy him some food, great, and I can fill up their gas tank so they can do some other things, and then, I mean, that now he's got more money for heroin still. So it's kind of you can't see hands on the radio, I guess.
Huh? But that's okay. It's sort of, yeah, he's doing the scales of justice type thing, you know, here, there, anywhere. Let's talk about you personally, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. You were addicted. You still are addicted.
Yeah, I've got 13 years in recovery, and I started using opiates and other substances at about 14.
And what started? Peer pressure, or what was the reason you started?
For me, I don't know if there was like a reason I could put my finger on.
Oh, really?
I left home at a pretty young age, and was kind of living on my own on the street at about 14, 15, in and out of juvie, and was just always around. Seemed to kind of be the next step in progression towards being a crazy rebel kid, you know.
Right.
And then what was fun turned into dependence, and what was dependence turned into essential slavery to this substance that was the only way that I could wake up and continue throughout the day without pain.
It got to the point where you did not feel normal unless you had your fix.
Well, beyond that, beyond the psychological things going on, there's the physiological dependence, right? So I'd wake up in the morning, and the first thing you have to do in the morning to be able to do anything else is do a hit of dope, because your whole body is sending you all the signals with gut-wrenching pain and nausea and diarrhea, and all these other things are all going on, and there's a fire inside you, and you know that will go away the instant you put that substance back into your body, and you can avoid all that misery. You even know as soon as you have it and you're starting to prepare it, all that starts to alleviate. Like, your body and your mind know, all right, man, it's going to be moments before I have the cure to this pain. Physical, real pain, not like there's all the psychological garbage right. too, but that's in that moment, you're not processing what emotions you're covering up with drugs. You're just trying to not be in actual physical pain anymore.
That's something they do say about opiate addicts, that the coming off of it, I mean, some people equate it to, I'd rather die than do that. It's a tough thing to get off of.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. I'm from a pretty straight edge family. You know, my family's mm-hmm. My family's LDS, so they don't even drink coffee. You know what I mean?
Right.
So comprehension of the things I was going to, or how to help or address any of that stuff, completely alien to everybody in my family. And my mother, as the loving, beautiful, caring human that she is, she just wanted her son to not be in pain anymore, right? So they would help me. Never exactly for drugs, right? But they would help me take care of some of the other things so that I could use my own resources that I got, however, to get drugs.
Would you consider them supportive or enabling?
I think no
slam on your parents or anything,
right.
because you were the one with the disease, you know. So,
and I think they were trying their best to be supportive, but I mean, there's a lot more education and resources out now as opposed right. to in the early to mid 90s, right? It was like we have the internet now, so you can yeah. everything's at your fingertips.
Right.
But I think. Like many other parents, the intention is to be supportive. Exactly how to do that is difficult.
Is there help out there for a parent who is looking at a situation like this?
I know some of the things that my folks did in my quest for recovery was my folks would go to different AA meetings or NA meetings, mm-hmm. knowing they're not an addict. And like my mother would go to an NA meeting, say what she got here, man. I'm not a drug addict, man. I am here to figure out how to help one, though. And for her, the rooms were always real receptive to her, and
mm-hmm.
and some of them are like, hey, this room is for addicts and people in recovery, and this really isn't the place for you, but here's a phone list for people you can talk to about that. So some of that was helpful to her. Some, I mean, now I think there's all kinds of resources, right? You can just
Google it.
Google it or Safari it or yeah. Yahoo it or whatever.
Whatever you do, yeah. And you can find the help out there. And I'm sure I know you're right that from the early 90s till today, there is a lot more help out there for parents who are in the same situation. During active addiction, not particularly you, but anybody, enabling actions, supporting actions, how does it change or how does it help in your recovery? I mean, can someone be enabling to you and still help you get off? Or do they have to just be supportive? Or what about those who just say, I'm done with it, I'm cutting them off, don't ever talk to me again until you're straight?
So I'm going to go back to me personally because okay. I'm the person I know the most.
There you go.
My addiction was hell for me. And the one thing that made my addiction manageable was the love of my wife, right?
Okay, now what do you mean by manageable?
Able to stay doing the things I needed to do, which was just provide enough money for the house to keep the lights on,
mm-hmm.
and also stay well. And by stay well, I mean with enough drugs, with enough heroin, to not be in gut-wrenching pain, but not too much to where I could still go to work, right? The one thing that enabled me to continue to do that was the love of my wife. My wife who loved me very dearly, saw the good things in me and stuck around until she didn't. I came home from work one day and my wife's things were packed. We were staying down in Colorado and it was hell for her down there because she didn't have any friends or family around anywhere and there was just me and our son. And one day she had all of her things packed and I gave her a ride to the airport and she came back home to Washington. And
she'd had enough?
Yeah, she said, I'm not divorcing you. I'm not leaving you. But I'm not staying here when you're doing this anymore. And that's, I mean, that was...
Was that a wake-up call to you?
It was the beginning of a wake-up call.
But it still didn't quite...
Right, it still wasn't it. And so after she took my son and went home, I went off the deep end for a minute. I didn't have a wife or a kid at home. I didn't have to control my house anymore because I was the only one living in it. So I got pretty nuts.
Give me that dope.
Right, and I got... Yep. I lived in an apartment up in kind of a decent neighborhood. So I just left my door open. I didn't even shut my door anymore. Shooting drugs in the living room, going nuts. And then my parole officer showed up and all that's going on and got locked up for a little bit and nobody bailed me out this time.
Which is something the wife would have done before.
Yeah, she would have done everything she could to get me out of there.
Yep.
And without that peace, like waking up in the morning dope sick without any drugs and missing that like comforting hand on your back that's saying, babe, it's going to be all right. Like without that there, that was that's when I started to realize the other things that were missing. That absence of love, that absence of this unconditional kindness and caring, and also knowing that it is just a little bit in the distance and there's a path to get back to that kindness and to that love. It's there waiting for me. If I can just make some moves, right? Make some moves, shake a few habits loose, I can have that back. Now that's one thing that my wife was really good at. She never told me we're done forever. She said, she made it very clear that there are certain behaviors and certain habits and certain substances that she was going to no longer allow to be around her and her son, who is also my son.
I would assume that your wife was not an addict.
Right. She's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
she's one of those weird, strange people that can have a drink every 6 months or something,
right,
and then stops like after two or three drinks. It's freaking weirds me out.
I take it you can't do that.
No.
Uh-huh.
No, I don't have the ability.
And is that because you were, were you addicted to alcohol too? Or is that just something that you have an addictive personality?
So, and I don't know. There's a million different kinds of science out there. And I don't know exactly the answers to all those. What I do know is that for me, in my history, I've had pieces of recovery and thought I was all right, had a few drinks while I was inebriated, after a few drinks, made other poor choices. Like, oh, it's all right to do a little bit of coke, or I can smoke a little bit of weed, or I can do a little bit of Chiva. And then that, for me, led into things that I can no longer manage. So just for me to be safe, when we go out, I got a crayon and soda in my hand. So my hand's full, still doing all the other things, hanging out, singing, dancing, doing karaoke, and I got a crayon and soda in my hand. So nobody's offering me a drink. I keep my hand full. And I know that for me, it's worked. Not drinking, not doing anything else. I've been able to progress in my life and do and accomplish more.
I'm going to go to the end of the story here for a second, because I know the listeners out there are wondering, did you and your wife get back together?
Yeah, we have. Since then, we have another child. In February, we celebrated, I better not get this wrong, 17 years of marriage.
You're right. You're sure? Okay, close enough.
17 years of marriage.
How many years of separation in that? Or was it even a year?
So in that, during that...
After she left you, how long did it take you to get your stuff back together?
Well, I probably had my stuff back together in three, but I was serving a 7-year sentence.
Oh, okay.
So I went to prison for 7 years of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the first 2 or 3 years of that time in prison, I didn't use very wisely. I just parted it up in the joint with all the fellas and drinking hooch and doing dope in the joint. There's just as much drugs in there as there is out here.
Hold it. That's not supposed to be, is it? I mean,
well,
if you're locked up for 7 years and for three of those years you were able to get stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and the quality of drugs inside is probably higher than the quality of drugs they have out here on the street. You don't take a risk like smuggling drugs into prison unless it's going to be the good stuff. So,
wow, I hadn't realized that. Even after you were in prison, you were still doing it for 3 years.
Yeah,
and then something turned around.
Yeah, my wife came to visit me.
Mm-hmm.
And
sounds like you have one hell of a wife.
She's pretty good.
Yeah.
She's pretty good. She came to visit me and she brought my son with her. And I'd already kind of started making some changes, kind of paying attention to who I'm associating with in there, trying to get some things dialed in. And for clarification, most of what was going on in the joint was more just homemade hooch because I couldn't afford a lot of the
right
funner things.
Pack of cigarettes only goes so far.
Right. And my son, who was about 5 years old at this time, Cass Jr., and he looked up at me and said, come home. It was real hard to explain to him why I couldn't come home. And I just had to tell him that I made some decisions that prevent me from doing that, and it's not my choice anymore. And then he said, come home soon. And with that kind of clicking a little bit, just enough, I was able to kind of make some changes while I was still incarcerated. I was able to take advantage of a program that the Sunshine Foundation did, where they brought a community college into the prison I was at.
Mm-hmm.
And just able to start making some moves in the right direction.
You've got a degree now?
Yeah. Yeah.
You have a Bachelor of Arts degree?
Yeah.
You're helping out in recovery programs?
Trying to do what I can.
And your life has turned around?
I'd say so.
Join us next Monday morning at 8:40 a.m. for our continuing discussion on substance use disorder as a treatable disease, brought to you by the Grays Harbor Consortium, exclusively on 103.5 FM and 1450 a.m. KBKW. To hear archived discussions, log on to gograysharbor.com.